Good evening. Our learning will also be an uplifting of the soul of Ozer ben Alexander, a Kohen Berger. We are learning the book of Shoftim. We're up to what they call the sixth chapter. We have just finished learning the story of Devorah and the great victory of Devorah and Barak against their enemies from the north. And now we are attacked from the enemies from the east. We know that when Avraham Avinu was nearing the end of his days, he sent his children eastward, and they developed into nations, one of which is Midian. So Midian became a prime force in the east, and they became a huge nation that had many nomadic tribes with it. And Midian came in from the east. Now they are a huge nation. They come to challenge Israel. And for 7 years, they take over our sovereignty. And they swoop in periodically, take all the grains that we have. The Jews get so scared, they run up into the caves and they hide. And they come in and consume everything. The Midianites would come in with their camels, with their tents, and just consume everything in sight. So the Jews were suffering. You can't plant, you can't develop if you believe everything you do will be destroyed by the Midianites. So they prayed to Hashem, and Hashem sends them a prophet, and the prophet tells them, I took you out of Egypt, God says. I've been good to you. I took you out of slavery. I saved you from the oppressors that came to attack you. I chased away the nations. I gave you their land. And I said, you be faithful to me. Do not worship the pagan gods of the Amori. Do not worship the gods that were worshipped hitherto in this land. But you didn't listen. And so the people are getting this rebuke. An angel comes and he is going to visit a man by the name of Gideon. Gideon's father is Joash, and they live on the eastern side of the Jordan. They live near Midianite territory. And what's happening is it's just before Pesach, and Gideon is trying to salvage some of the grains. He knows that any day now the Midianites can come in, because they know that the grains are ripening now as Pesach is approaching. It's the season, it's the end of the winter. So he wants to salvage some of the food. They have planted grains, they have grains that have grown, and what he does is he is threshing the wheat, he's separating the wheat kernels from the stalk. He wants to hide some wheat so that they'll have some food. So he's not doing it in the regular place where they'd have this flat land where they thresh the wheat. Instead, he is hiding in the wine press to thresh the wheat. So he wants to hide from the Midianites in case they show up. They're not going to check the wine presses, because the time to use the wine presses is Hanukkah. We harvest the grapes now. Harvest season for grapes begins now in Cheshvan, running into Hanukkah. And then at Hanukkah, you start pressing the grapes, making grape juice and wine. In their days, it was wine. And then by the time Pesach comes, no one has any grapes left. So he's holding in Nisan. No one in their right mind has any grapes left in Nisan. So it's the ideal time to use the area of the wine press to hide his activity of threshing the wheat. No one's going to be looking there. So he's in the wine press threshing the wheat. And the angel appears. And he says to him, Hashem is with you, you mighty one. He sees him picking up this large bean that ordinarily would be used to press the wine. And instead he's banging the little kernels with it. So he's so powerful, he could lift up this beam and lower it as though it's a regular stick to beat the kernels with. So he says, wow, Hashem is with you, powerful one. And Gideon says to him, he doesn't realize it's an angel yet, he says, please, sir, if God is with us, so why are we in this state that I have to be in hiding here in the wine press to prepare the wheat? And last night was Pesach. My father told me the story. Sounds like he's a little boy. We're going to see he's a general. He's a warrior. He has children of his own. But here we see that in Judaism, even as people age, if they can, they go back to their parents for the Seder. Gideon has his own family, as we'll see at the end of the story. He has many children. But he goes back to his father for the Seder night. And he says, my dad told me last night all the wondrous things that happened in Egypt. I don't see miracles today. I see suffering today. And I heard the Jews weren't on such a high level in Egypt. So if they were pious in Egypt, God should help us in their merit. If they weren't pious in Egypt, well, Hashem helped them. He should certainly help us. And Hashem appears to him at that point and says, you just made a very good argument. Go, now you have a right to victory. And here we learn a concept in prayer. Prayer, the Gemara in Tanis tells us, is not only a question of how pious the person praying is. It's also a question of how he presents his argument. Sometimes you could have a person who is not the most pious person in Israel, but they express a good argument, and in heaven they listen and they say, he's got a point. And his prayer could be the turning point. That's why every person has to take their own prayer seriously. Because every one of us has potential to be the one whose prayer will matter. It's not only a question of how pious you are, it's also a question of how ingenious you are, how original you can be in your prayer. We have to be respectful. We should also be original. So with this claim, Hashem says to Gideon, now you've turned the tide. In heaven, your claim is accepted, and with that strength, you can go and lead the Jews to victory. So Gideon says, excuse me, sir, how am I going to save the Jewish people? My section of the tribe is the smallest section of the tribe of Menashe. Remember, they're on the eastern side of the Jordan, Menashe. And I'm the youngest in the family. I'm the youngest son in my father's family. And Hashem says to him, I will be with you. Remember, what was the name Moshe came to the Jewish people with? I will be with you. Eheyeh, Hashem said. I will be with you. So now Hashem appears with the same nation and says, you will finish off the Midianites as though you were battling a single person. And Gideon says, please, if I find favor before you, so just give me a sign. You know, I never met you before, he says to the angel. He says, can you give me a sign? He thinks he's a prophet, right? So he says, I'm going to bring out a flower offering, and I'll place it before you. So the angel says, I'm waiting for you. Gideon comes. And he doesn't only bring a flower offering. He brings a goat. And he brings a large volume, ephah. Ephah is the equivalent of about 25 liters of flour that he brings as an offering. I'm saying he brings a large amount. Now, they're at a very difficult state in their lives. I mean, they're living under duress from the Midianites. He brings a large volume of matzah flour, and he brings gravy, and he brings it under the tree next to the angel. And the angel says, take the meat, take the matzahs, put it all the basket, pour the gravy over it on this rock. So Gideon does that. And the angel extends his staff to the offering, and he touches the meat and the matzahs, and a fire shoots up from the rock and consumes all the food that was there, and the angel disappears. With that, the angel's gone. So Gideon suddenly realized, hey, I was just talking to an angel. And he says, oh, Hashem, I'm scared. I just spoke to an angel face to face. And Hashem says to him, peace will be with you. Don't worry, you're not going to die. And Gideon erects in that place an altar. And he says, Hashem, from now on your name is peace. From here we learn that one of the names of Hashem is Shalom. That's why the rabbis instituted a short while later in the period of Shoftim, that when you greet a friend, you're supposed to say Shalom Aleichem, which is a way of saying God should be with you. When we say Shalom Aleichem, we are saying Hashem, whose name is peace, should be with you. It's supposed to remind us about the idea that we should be at peace with the other person. We end our Shabbos prayers. What do we say to the guy standing next to me? Shabbat Shalom. That's a custom that's 2 millennia old, to tell the man next to me Shabbat Shalom. I'm saying now that Shabbat has settled in, could be all week, I didn't have time to talk to you. Could be all week I was in a rush. Shabbat is settling in. I want there to be peace among us. So this is another fulfillment of that institution that we greet one another with Hashem's name. Hashem's name is Shalom. Good evening, Jacob. Oh, I get a Shalom, yes.
If you say good Shabbat, is that the same kind of thing? Or is it appropriate to say just Shabbat Shalom?
Depends on what society you're in. If you're in a society where they say good Shabbos, don't be a weirdo. But if it's acceptable to say Shabbat Shalom, it's better to say Shabbat Shalom.
Does it say that in the commentary?
No. Where did we get that from? It's a Mishnah and Tractate Brachos and more sources. But for now, we'll move forward.
You just happened to memorize them. How did you know
You'll learn the Mishnah and Brachos too. You'll learn it. It's the last Mishnah and Tractate Brachos. You'll see. You'll get there. So, we move forward. That night, Hashem tells him to do something which would ordinarily be a sin. But a prophet, now Gidon is getting prophecy, a prophet, if he is told by Hashem to do something on a one-time basis, what we call hora'at sha'a, Hashem doesn't tell him, take away a mitzvah from Torah. That couldn't happen in prophecy. But if Hashem tells him now, even though this is a mitzvah, I want you to do differently on a one-time basis, so then we listen to the prophet. We do that. A prophecy can teach us on a one-time basis to transgress a commandment in Torah. That's what's called hora'at sha'a. One can get instruction that for sha'a, for this time, specifically, that night, in Gidon's case, they're supposed to do something that ordinarily would be prohibited. And the Tanakh is filled with examples of that. And here we see one example of that. That night, Hashem tells Gidon, your father has been raising two oxen in honor of the pagan gods he has at home. I want you to take those oxen. For 7 years he's been raising them in order to serve them to his God. I want you to go to your father's altar. Your father, Yoash, has an altar in his yard, which is in honor of the Baal, the pagan belief Baal. I want you to break that altar. Then I want you to take the tree that's growing there called an Asherah. They worship that tree. Cut it into pieces. Now, erect a new altar in honor of Hashem and take the cow, one of those cows, and sacrifice it on the wood of the Asherah in honor of Hashem. None of this is permissible in Torah. You're not allowed to use wood from an Asherah. You're not allowed to use a cow that was designated for a pagan god. You're not allowed to bring a sacrifice at night. You're not allowed to bring a sacrifice outside the temple. Gidon wasn't a Kohen. He can't offer sacrifices. We have so many things here that are against the rules of Torah. But Hashem told him, tonight, that's what I want you to do. So Gidon is supposed to do that. Hashem says, I want it to be a Kiddush Hashem. So he takes 10 servants with him, and he bashes his father's altar, and then he cuts up the tree that they used to worship, the tree of Asherah, and he erects a new altar in honor of Hashem, and he puts the wood there as firewood. He slaughters one of the cows that were designated for the Baal, and he offers it in honor of Hashem on that new altar in honor of Hashem. The city town folk wake up that day, and they see their altars being bashed, and the tree they worshipped being cut up, and the cow they've been raising all these years is gone, and they see the ashes there on a new altar. So they start questioning, who's done that? And they start questioning and verifying until they hear that Gidon did it. So they come to Yoash's house and they say, give over the boy. We want Gidon. He broke the altar of Baal and he cut down the Asherah. And Yoash comes out and tells the people, he says, Baal is a god, right? That's what you guys believe. Why do you have to save him? If he's a god, let him fight for himself. What are you worried about? He'll take care of my son. Yarev lo, he says, anyone who tries to fight with Baal, you have nothing to worry about. He won't live another day. Let Baal take care of him. He's so powerful. So they say, oh, he's right. And from that day onward, they give Gidon a nickname, Yerubaal. Yarev bo Baal. We're waiting for Baal to take up the fight with him. So Gidon got that nickname, Yerubaal. Okay.
Is it appropriate to give people nicknames?
On a Thursday night, you are cordially invited to raise that. We'll discuss it.
Yes, or maybe, or...
Not every answer is a yes or a no. Some answers need a... I want to give you a better answer. No, I'm serious.
No,
if you have
a
smartphone,
funny,
write it down.
Every time I ask a question, like, yes, maybe at Thursday night.
Because you ask good questions. They deserve long answers. So the tribes of the East, they're gathering, and they come to the Yisrael Valley. And Gidon has an inspiration. Rambam explains that there are levels of prophecy. One level of prophecy is a heavenly inspiration to action, where a person might not be the biggest tzaddik. Gidon has strengths, Gidon has weaknesses, Gidon is not the greatest, most learned rabbi of his day, but Gidon is supposed to lead the Jews now to successful battle. And so Gidon sends people throughout his half a tribe of Menashe, and he tells them, come with me to war. He gathers his family and he's headed out to war. So he takes the northern tribes to come with him southward to the Yisrael Valley to fight. Who are the northern tribes? Asher, Zvulun, Naphtali. Remember, we met them with Dvorah's battle. So he summons them to join him to war. And then Gidon asks Hashem, if you're going to let me win this time, and we're going to see that Gidon is heavily outnumbered. We'll see the numbers in a minute. He says, I'm going to put a piece of wool outside. He's by the silo where they gather the grain. He says, tomorrow morning, I want you to curse the whole world but me. I want there not to be dew anywhere in the world, just on this piece of wool. And then I'll know that you're going to save me. So he doesn't get his wish. Hashem isn't about to stop the dew from falling all over the planet just because Gidon asked for it. Here you see an example of what we discussed earlier tonight. You can't just make conditions for Hashem. But when he wakes up in the morning, he can take that piece of wool, and when he wrings it out, he gets a jug full of water. So he wanted water in the wool, he got it. He wanted there shouldn't be dew in the rest of the planet. Hashem doesn't want the rest of the planet to be destroyed in honor of Gidon. So Gidon isn't so happy, because a prophet is supposed to get his signs exactly right. And his sign didn't come out exactly right. That's not what's supposed to happen. So he says, Hashem, please don't be upset with me. I'm going to ask one more time. Let's do a new test. Tomorrow morning, there should be dew all over the ground around the wool and no dew on the wool. And that he gets. So the next morning, the wool is completely dry, even though all around it is covered with dew. So Gidon has a sign, and he is convinced that Hashem is with him. He can move forward. So he gets up early, and he takes his people. The Midianites are camped in the valley under them. And Hashem tells Gidon, you have too many soldiers with you. I don't want the Jews to think that they were victorious because they had such a great army. Tell the people, whoever is scared should go to Mount Gilad and look down from Mount Gilad. Those of you who ever visited Beit Shan in the north, Beit Shan is situated right next to the mountainous region called Harei Gilad, the Gilad Mountains. They are so tall that you can see past the Jordan from the Gilad Mountains. You could see deep into Jordan.
Located in Jordan today, right?
What?
The Gilad Mountain is in nowadays Jordan.
Could be, I don't know.
And
I don't know.
And why are they called that name?
I don't know.
Thursday night.
No, no, I can't answer on Thursday night. I just don't know. Sorry.
Well, I know that Eliyahu comes from there, because Eliyahu, the prophet, comes from there.
Very nice. Very nice.
So why is there just a reason?
So okay, I don't know.
Never mind.
22,000 soldiers leave him, and 10,000 soldiers remain. So when they numbered 32,000 soldiers, 22,000 got scared and left. The 22,000 leave, and the 10,000, they're not scared. They're with Gideon. So here we have to start appreciating that even if the people are described as not being such tzaddikim, they're not so pious, they're still very, very, very special, righteous people. So Hashem tells Gideon, you know, you have too many people. Go down to the water, let them drink from the water, and there we'll decide who should go and who not. We'll clarify it there. I'll give you the sign. So he brings them down to the waters to drink, and Hashem says, whoever laps up from the water, you put them on one side. And those that bow before the water to drink, you put them on the other side. And they end up with 300 men. So 9,700 of his men who were so pious, they had worshipped their, in those days they used to bow and worship their reflection in the water before they drank from it. So 9,700 of them were bowing next to the water before they drank. So Hashem says, tell them they should go away. So Gideon is left with 300 men. So, correct.
So
he's got a big army.
Yeah, why would have a big army?
They're
trying to
go to war
with the big army to make sure that you win.
God.
Hashem told
them
to do it.
Hashem told them, let's move forward
in the story for a minute. But it takes a giant person to be willing to do this. We will see this theme repeat itself over and over again in Jewish history. In Tanakh and in our own history as well. Yes?
I've been teaching that
correct. Okay, very nice. Okay.
They have everything inside. They kept doing that. They were concentrating on their job and not
on their needs. Okay, very nice. Find the source for it, okay?
Although, just a quick question, why did they have to go over the Giladi Mountains and then look over? They looked and then what?
They're going, let's continue the story and you'll see the answer. So, what they do tell the people is, give your friends all the food you brought with you, give them your shofar. Each person should have a horn to blow the horn. And they're looking down at the Midianites. Now, when they look down, they see so many soldiers that they can't see the edge of the camp. There's so many soldiers down below that they cannot see the end of the camp that they're facing. And that night, Hashem tells Gideon, time to attack. You're going to win. Now, you don't usually attack at night. Because at night, you can stumble on things. You can just destroy yourself. You don't see where you're going. But Hashem told him to attack. And Hashem tells him, you know what, if you're scared, go with your lad. The lad's name was Phura. Go down to the camp, listen to what people say, and that'll give you strength. And then you'll go and win. So he's scared. He goes down. And he hears two guards talking. It's exactly the time, the changing of the guard in the camp of Midian. And the new guard comes in and he says, you know, I had a funny dream now. I was sleeping. I had a funny dream. I dreamt that there's bread rolling. A loaf of bread is of barley. Now that's not normal. You don't make bread of barley. You make bread of wheat. He says, a loaf of bread of barley was rolling and approaching our camp. And when he came to the camp, he came to a tent and knocked it down. And the tent didn't just fall down, the tent flipped over. So his friend said, I'll tell you what it is. Those Jews, well, they just brought a sacrifice of barley, the Omer sacrifice. That's a sign. The Jews are going to win. Gidon's going to finish us off. Okay, they have an army that outnumbers his army, right? They're huge. The Jews haven't had a victory in 7 years. And now, this is how he interprets the dream to his friend. Chazal say, in a chalom alechech la'acharapeh. Dreams go after their interpretation. Gidon hears, that's what they're dreaming about. That's how he interprets the dream. He bows down, he thanks Hashem, and he goes back to his camp and he tells the people, get up, we won. It's over. We've won the war. He divides them into three groups, and each one has a trumpet in his hand, and each one has an empty earthenware pitcher, and each one has inside the pitcher, he has a torch. So you have 100, 100, 100, and torches, and pitchers, and trumpets. They approach the camp. He says, you're going to do what I say. I'm going to come to the edge of the camp. You do as I do. I'm going to blow the shofar. Everyone's going to blow the shofar. And then you're just going to stand around the camp and yell out, the sword is here on behalf of Hashem and Gidon. Gidon comes with his 100 men. It's exactly 1/3 into the night as the guard is shifting. They've just woken the new shift. The old shift is going to sleep. That's the weakest time of a post, right? The new shift is still half out of it. The old shift is dying to go to sleep. They're at the end of the guard duty. And now they stand there and they start blowing their shofar and bashing their earthenware. The earthenware pitchers they brought with them. They're standing there not doing a thing, just blowing the shofar and yelling, the sword is here on behalf of Hashem and Gidon. So the Midianite camp wakes up, everyone's half asleep, it's dark, they can't see what's going on, and they see torches, and they hear trumpets, and they hear yelling, it's the sword of Hashem and Gidon. So what do they think? Oh no, they're upon us, they're here. So people grab their swords. They can't see who's standing next to them. Maybe that's the enemy. He's not taking any risks. Panic. They start killing one another. Now what happened here was that the attack was not done by one nation. Midian had joined forces with Amalek and other tribes of the east, so they didn't even know one another. So you had this huge camp, and mayhem ensues in the dark. And they've had this huge noise, and they see torches standing from the Jewish camp, and they hear trumpets. They don't see soldiers, but they don't know what they're seeing. They see darkness. They see movement. They see everyone's moving everywhere. They cannot move forward towards Gidon. Gidon's standing with his men. They want to retreat. The person standing behind him, no, thank you. The person standing behind him, well, he doesn't know who's coming. So internal war begins. Gidon hasn't done anything. All they're doing is standing there causing mayhem in the Midianite camp. The camp starts running. And they're running, and Gidon hasn't won. Oh yes, he's won by instilling fear in the enemy. He hasn't won by the sword. He has won because Hashem sent him at that pivotal moment, and Hashem helped him cause mayhem. Hashem caused. That was Hashem's miracle here. So everyone realizes Gidon's winning. Now no one knows how small Gidon's camp is except for Gidon. And Gidon tells everyone, join me. And now the different armies that have been waiting on the side, they join the battle. And so they kill two of the Midianite kings. And they're in the middle of battle. Now, what's about to happen is going to endanger the whole camp. So at this point, they're winning the war, and what's going to happen now will endanger the whole war effort. The people of Ephraim, we're going to meet them twice, and then in a roundabout way, we're going to meet them again and again in Tanakh. They come to Gidon, and they say, why didn't you call us to this battle? Why didn't you summon us to fight the Midianites? And they start arguing violently with Gideon. So they're in the middle of a war. It's not like the war is over. And they're arguing, why didn't you call me? And Gideon says, you know, when we were fighting the Midianites, so they were trying to leave Israel to cross the Jordan, you guys went down and captured the Jordan. And when the two Midianites, kings, Orev and Ze'ev, Raven and Wolf, when they tried to come and cross the Jordan, you're the ones who took them down. You know who won this war? You guys won the war. You know, what you guys did without preparation is better than everything I did with all my preparation. You guys are amazing. So Gideon realizes it's all about ego. And so he praises them. He uses the term Tov Olelot Ephraim, what you, Ephraim, did with your weak hand, with your by-the-way soldiers, without being prepared. He calls it Olelot. Olelot are the grapes that don't develop right. So he says, your grapes, when they're not ripe and underdeveloped, are better than our grapes when we harvest them properly and we do everything to take care of them. Tov Olelot Ephraim, the weak grapes of Ephraim, are better than Bitzir Aviezer, than what my family harvested, our prime harvest, which is a way of saying, you guys did everything in this war. What you did without preparation is 10 times better than what I did with all my army. And after he speaks to them like that, so they calm down. He says, you know, I wish I could capture kings like you guys caught the kings. And when he tells them that, they calm down. So what Gideon does now is Gideon teaches us, we are starting to learn about Gideon's humility. When the angel first came to him, he said, I'm not worthy. And now in the middle of this battle, he could take his soldiers and kill the tribe of Ephraim. We're going to see that the story will repeat itself in the days of Yiftach. Yiftach is the opposite of Gideon. If Gideon is super humble, Yiftach is going to be super arrogant. At the end of the story, the people of Israel will ask Gideon to take the throne, and Gideon will say, no way, God is your king. At the beginning of Yiftach's story, before Yiftach even accomplishes anything, he says, I'm only leading you to war if I'm the boss. The exact opposite. We see Gideon and Yiftach. And when the tribe of Ephraim comes to Yiftach with the same claim, Yiftach will take his soldiers and slaughter thousands and thousands of people from the tribe of Ephraim. The exact opposite approach. But they're both going to be leaders of Israel. And they are both considered our small leaders. Gideon and Yiftach are both the example of an unlearned leader. They are both people who led the Jewish people to a military victory, and they were both not well learned in Tanakh, in our tradition, in Halacha. So,
are the only people who were like that?
No, but they're the prime examples. So he continues the war, and he's heading eastward, and he crosses the Jordan, and he wants to catch the remaining Midianite soldiers. He's continuing with his army of 300 men. And he comes to a Jewish city called Sukkot. We know this is where Yaakov Avinu camped as he was heading into Israel. Right? When Yaakov comes back from his journey to Lavan, he comes back and he camps in a place called Sukkot. So he tells the men of Sukkot, you know, we're all tired. Give us some bread to eat. I'm chasing after the remaining two kings, Zevach and Salmuna, the remaining two Midianite kings. Give my army food to eat. And the leaders of Sukkot say, you think you won the war? Do we see you holding on to the heel of Zevach and Salmuna? We have to play the game on your side. We're not giving your army to eat. And Gideon says, okay, I will win this war. And when I come back from the war, I will take you leaders and I will pierce your flesh as I will beat you to a bloody pulp with the cactuses of the desert. And he continues and he comes to the next Jewish city called Penuel. And He tells the men of Penuel, please give my soldiers food to eat. I'm in the middle of a battle. I'm heading towards the remaining two Midianite kings. Help us out. And they give him the same answer. They say, why do you think you're going to win? We're not joining your side. And he tells them the same thing. And they tell him, we're not worried. We have a fortress here. We have a tower. You can't touch us. And Gideon says, yeah, I'm going to take down that tower. When I come back, the reason you guys think you can defy me is because of that tower. I will personally take down your tower. Zevach and Salmuna have a very small army left, only 15,000 men. They lost 120,000. So Yiftach's army, do the math, 300 against 120,000 men. By how much were they outnumbered? So do the math. 400 Midianite, his whole army was 300, and they had 400 soldiers for every soldier he had.
One against it.
But they won, you know, they won because Hashem wanted them to win. We can understand the psychology of it. In the middle of the night, you have different armies. They don't know what's happening. All they see is movement. People start fighting with one another. Okay? Obviously, it takes a special hand of God.
Are they drinking or a special sort of state of
I think it's called darkness.
Relaxing.
It's called night.
No,
you wake up in the middle of the night, you're not sure what's going on. And this is part of the miracle. This is what Hashem wanted should happen. So Gideon attacks them. They thought after they crossed the Jordan, they were closer to their home territory. So they thought that they were safe. They didn't imagine that Gideon would continue his chase. And he does. And he destroys their last 15,000 soldiers. And he captures the two leaders, Zevach and Salmuna. The sun has not yet reached its pinnacle. It's not yet noontime. And Gideon has finished his battle. So he captures one of the young men of the city of Sukkot, and he says, I want a list. Who are the elders? Who are the leaders of the city of Sukkot? So he writes down the 77 names. And then he comes to the people of Sukkot, and he says, look here. Here are the two kings that you guys cursed me out and said, who said you're going to win them? You didn't want to give my tired soldiers bread. And he takes the elders and he beats them with the thorns, with the cactuses of the desert. And so he punishes them and the men of Sukkot who tried to stand in his way. And then he goes back to Penuel, and the people of Penuel, they live up to their word. They put up a fight, not a smart thing. So he destroys their tower and kills all the men. And then he says to Zevach and Salmuna, he says, in Tavor, you met people. Where are they? And they say, they look just like you, but we killed them. And he says, you know what? They were my brothers. Had you left them alive, I would leave you alive. But if you killed my brothers, then I'm going to kill you. He tells his eldest son, remember we said Gideon sounds like a youngster, but he has kids. He tells his eldest son, kill them. And the child is scared to draw his sword. He's still young. He sees these two giants, Midianite kings. And so Zevach and Salmuna tell Gideon, please have mercy on us. You're a brave warrior. You kill us, it'll be a quicker death. Why don't you kill us? And so he does. And then he takes, they had half moons on their camels. They were Yishmaelim, right? All the descendants of Avram who came from Keturah were called Yishmaelim. So even though they were Midianites, they were also called Yishmaelim because the prime son from Hagar was Yishmael. So the other tribes also called themselves Yishmaelim. You notice that on many Arab countries' flags, you see a half moon. So this goes back to the days of Yishmael, who was very connected to the moon, right? Yishmael is the moon, Esav is the sun, and the Jewish calendar is the combination of the two. We go by the moon, but we have a leap year to adapt it to the sun. We also go by the seasons. So he asks the people of Israel, they tell him, we want you and your son and your grandson to be king. You saved us. And Gideon says, no, not me, not my son. Hashem is your king. And then Gideon says, I want one thing. Every one of you should take from his loot the nose rings that you have from their camels, these half moons that you have. I want each of you to give me that. So they spread out a blanket, and everyone gives them theirs, and it weighs 1,700 gold. And he combines all of them, and he makes them into this very, very long, like meters long of gold, a long like turban, a long apron, like a long sash. He makes a very, very long sash, and he sets it up in his hometown. He wants everyone to come see that sash, because when you see that sash that's linked tens of thousands of these pieces of gold, you appreciate that every one of those represents a soldier and his camel. And you start realizing Gideon with his 300 men took down an army that was this big. You see, right? You see, imagine, you see this long sash that extends, you know, the whole length of this room. And you see thousands of these little linked gold nose rings. You start appreciating how awesome the miracle was that Gideon won this war. That's what he wanted to accomplish. It didn't work. People said that sash must have godly powers, and they started worshiping it. And it backfired on him. So Gideon went home to lead a modest life. He ends up having 70 sons. He marries many women. And then he dies a ripe old age, and he gets buried in his home territory. He dies. The Jews go back to their sinful ways. They start worshiping the Baal. And they decide that they're going to believe in the god Baal Berit. And they ignore Hashem, and they ignore Gideon. And Gideon leaves behind a son named Avimelech, who actually came from his concubine in Shechem. And he tells his family in Shechem, he says, you don't want all my brothers to be your bosses. You might as well have one, and your best bet is me. So why don't you convince the people of Shechem to give me some money, and I'll hire some people, and we'll bump off all my brothers, and I'll be the king. And they do that. They give him money, and then he goes back to his father's house, and he gathers all his brothers, and he slaughters all his brothers. So Gideon left behind 70 children, and he brings them all, and on one stone, he slaughters all his brothers but one. A little one named Yotam escapes. And then Avimelech, this son of Gideon, goes to make a party with the people of Shechem as they're going to appoint him as their king. Yotam hears about this party. So Yotam heads to Shechem. He can't come near there. He's in danger. So instead he goes up on top of Har Gerizim, and he's going to call out to the party and say a very special mashal, a very special allegory, which we will pick up with Bezrat Hashem next week.